This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Yes, folks, we know you've missed the mayhem. We know you've craved the carnage. And you, madam, yes, you. We know your life's been sad and empty without robots being ripped to shreds.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me as always...
Ben Vanel here. It's the last time you'll see me in this time zone ever. I'm never coming back.
Whoa. This guy's living in the past forever.
Yeah, that's it. Back when you didn't have to be political. No.
The ultimate saving it for the pod. Just, guys, I'm moving overseas and I'm going to reveal it on the podcast.
This holiday is a sea change. That's how they start sometimes.
Yeah, I know.
My name's Adam Knox and I'm in pole position. Ooh. Ready to begin this.
Armored Core reference.
Kinda.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of big, loud machines.
Yes.
Going into areas over the last... little bit. It's a fun time to be a rev head.
That's right. The biggest loud machine of all, the PlayStation Portal.
Where do we want to start today?
Well, I don't know.
Not a lot on the docket, but a lot to say about the minimal amount of things on the docket.
Yeah.
We can start because we talked a little bit about it when they sort of showed it off, but they announced pricing and more details about the PlayStation name. Portal, which is the little handheld thing.
FKA Project Q, I think it was called when they revealed it in that PlayStation Direct thing a couple of months ago.
When it was still a non.
Was it really?
Yes, Project Q, I'm pretty sure.
Wasn't Project Q the name of those Persona games? Or maybe they're called Persona Q. That would make more sense.
I mean,
that would be cool if they were like, and the code name for it is Persona Q. Now, obviously, we're not going to call it this when it comes to market because that's already the name of a video game.
Yeah.
That's why it's an internal-only code name for now.
But you
got to admit, sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, weird to... Because it feels like they announced that thing like not that long ago and to go from Project Q to PlayStation Portal very quickly.
It kind of sounds like a menu screen.
It's weird in this...
I don't mind it. It's like... Because it makes me think PlayStation Portable.
I guess
they're taken out a B.
Yeah.
And some other letters.
It is weird in this. You rarely hear about that kind of stuff being announced with a codename anymore. That's so like mid-90s to me of like,
right,
we're working on our new console. It's codenamed the Dolphin, you know, and stuff like that. You hardly ever get that. Everything's got to be like so polished when it's revealed to the public now that it's rare that you get anyone going like, we're just tinkering away with this little hardware idea.
Was it the One X that was Scorpio? And then did the Series X have a code name as well? I feel the NX was the Switch.
Was it like Project Omega or something?
There was some, maybe it was Project X. Ooh. And that's why Sony had to go with Q because we're running out of letters for projects.
I think you're right. The one was Scorpion.
I think it was Scorpio.
Okay.
I feel like we're not going to be looped in on a Switch 2 code name. It's just everyone knows it as Switch 2.
Yeah.
And it feels like at this point they're just going to announce it and be like, this is what it is.
We're being
robbed of someone stealing the patent and letting us know the internal code name.
We'll start calling it Raven.
Yeah.
That's good.
Maybe we could get it going.
Gun 16. I guess Switch 2 is like the code name.
That's the informal, essentially, code name. Yeah. But that's boring, brother.
Yeah.
Let me pretend to be a spy while I'm reading Eurogamer. There's two pairs of headphones.
And they acquired some headphone company.
Did they?
Yeah. One that I'd never heard of. It was like a Bose equivalent, like a okay, high-end
right. noise cancelling.
Because I know they've got their like Sony proprietary like wireless headphone technology codec thing.
Yes.
That I think these are using, or maybe they're using that new one or something. I don't know. But it's the Pulse Pro, I think.
That's right, the Pulse.
The headphones are cool, which they look cool to me because they've got a thing that I've never seen before, which is a pair of breasts in real life. No, which is they've got a hanger that comes with it that is a charging hanger.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh,
you hang up your headphones and they're charging.
That is cool.
I love headphones for the night. And get them charging.
Sony
also make Walkmans too, which I just watched a 2-hour ad for in the cinemas.
Yeah. They do still make Walkmans.
Walkmans.
Yes.
I wish I could listen to my Walkmen in my Nissan. The Pulse headphones.
You've got the Pulse ones, right?
I've got the original ones. The fucking defunct, useless ones.
Yeah.
And they're all right. They're headphones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they work. Mm-hmm. There's not too much to say about them. They sound fine for the price, and they're pretty comfortable. They're made not for quite as big of a head as mine.
Right.
Okay.
But they do still fit.
Numbskulls only.
I don't know if there's something fucking wrong with my ears, but I didn't hear anything you said for the last few minutes. But
you've been riffing surprisingly well.
It's all guesswork. The 3D stereo audio stuff that they talk about often with the PlayStation, like you can hear it in 3D. I've never massively noticed the difference myself.
Sure. Mm.
I'm not an appreciator of a soundstage for whatever reason.
Sometimes there are those things with tech where like you see other people talk about it and then you just can't see or hear what the difference is, and you're like, are the people that are like going on about this, are they just having a lend?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Have they just read the blurb and they're like, well, I don't want to sound stupid, so I'd better
right, a bit
be
psychosomatic.
Like,
they're because I've only noticed true surround sound in a cinema where it's like there are speakers behind, you know, like it's literally surround sound.
I remember those like early demos of like it's 8D audio, which I don't know how the fuck they got to 8 so quickly, because it's 3. It would be like a pretend barbershop and someone would be walking around the microphones going, now I'm going to cut your hair over this side. I'm going to walk around and cut your hair over the
other
side.
Well, according to some cinemas, the fourth dimension is just getting a bit wet.
Yeah, if your chair vibrates as well.
Yeah, you can't tell me there's another 4 good ones after that.
Undiscovered dimensions.
Undiscovered
dimensions.
Well,
we've got it. We've nailed it.
Turns out they're all audio.
Yeah. sometimes detect the sounds. I got like a good pair of Sony headphones a while ago, and the soundstage stuff with music, I was like skeptical about that and put it on, and it's like, oh yeah, it does sound like the guitar is there and the drums are there. That's
sure.
cool. But
I can with games in particular, it feels like I was
so
already
defined.
Getting that in stereo as well. Like,
I've
never had a problem being like, oh yeah, that came from over there.
Mm.
Anyway,
the height of that for me is, do you remember like the Windows sound test thing? It was like a Realtek thing where it was like it'd just go left to right and right to left. It's like, yeah, that's all I need.
Damn, dude. I got 2 ears.
Exactly, yeah.
But there's like a configuration thing with the 3D audio that I've tried to work out if I'm because it's like a waterfall sound and they're like, adjust it. There's 5 notches up or down or whatever.
Mm.
And it says adjust it until it sounds right. And it makes the waterfall sound higher and lower. But I don't know what one's meant to be right. How high is the waterfall?
Are you meant to want to be like in the water getting
wet? Where am
wet?
I standing?
Yeah.
Because I could be at the top of a waterfall.
Yeah, I don't want to get wet. I'm moving that sound back.
It should be to the left and like 20 meters away, I guess.
Yeah, JFK style.
Yeah.
Back
that's
and to
so
the
funny
left.
As like a, yeah, the like calibration tests at the start of nearly every game of just like, move this scale until you can barely see the image on the left. Mm. And I'm always like, well, what is barely see? I mean, I can still sort of see it. Is that?
That's barely.
Is that too bright?
Yeah.
But then I'm like,
that's
if I take it a
means.
Notch down and I'm squinting, I'm like, I guess I can, if I squint, I can see it.
I
now
know
that's
where
barely.
It would be.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, exactly. I also know that it's there.
I don't quite get why there isn't a visual element with it too, where it's like, hey, here's this guy talking there. Adjust this until it sounds like he's there.
Yeah.
Right.
I could understand that. Anyway, they've got the earbuds too, which come in a cool, stupid-looking little PS5-looking case.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they look really dumb and like old Bluetooth headphones for a real estate agent, but also
that's
cool.
Yeah. I thought the end of that sentence was going to be, I've pre-ordered them.
No, not with any of this.
And I've signed up for a real estate course.
Yeah, I've got a spare afternoon.
You recently had a head injury.
Yeah,
so
yeah. I've got a beautiful $80 suit on the way. It's going to light up those inspections.
I can owe someone for a BMW for the rest of my life. That's fine. The PlayStation portal is sort of the main thing, which yes. I think all of us are a bit confounded by.
Yeah.
I felt insane this week. So this they dropped this. And they reveal the price point to be, I believe it's $199 US, which is, have they said what it is in Australian?
No, but it's the same as roughly 315-ish Australian dollars, I believe, is the conversion.
Right.
And in the US, a Switch Lite is $199.
Okay.
And sure, here okay. I think they're $349. And generally things go a little bit above because...
Bit of tax and shit.
The US prices never include taxes. So,
It'll
probably be about $350.
$350-ish. And I saw a lot of people online being like, wow, that's a really attractive price point. And I felt insane because this thing is not doing anything. it can stream from your PlayStation 5 over your Wi-Fi connection.
Yes.
In your house.
Hello, how you doing? Sorry to interrupt. It's me, Adam, from the podcast you're listening to. I'm jumping in after the recording to do a quick little correction here, something we don't normally do, but we don't normally have to. It's our first ever mistake on the show. Hooray! We say while we're talking about the PlayStation Portal here that it has to be on the same Wi-Fi network as your PS5. That's wrong. It just has to be connected to Wi-Fi. It can play the PS5 remotely. So it can play games from a physical PS5 remotely as long as the thing is connected to a Wi-Fi network. We got our wires crossed with that. It doesn't change much about what we're going to say about how we feel about it because, you know, but an important distinction to make. So I thought I'd jump in and let you know that, yeah, we got mixed up there. You can connect to Wi-Fi with a PlayStation Portal anywhere and play your PS5 back home, even if you're away from the thing. Also, correction for when we're talking about Gran Turismo later, we completely forgot to talk about how Jerry Halliwell is in the movie, which is, I think, the more significant error. Ignoring a Spice Girl makes no sense. Getting confused about Wi-Fi, sure. But having a Spice Girl walk in front of you and go like, that's just a person! That's ridiculous. Anyway, back to us getting some details about the PlayStation Portal wrong. But to be clear, it works over any Wi-Fi network. See you later. Well, see you immediately with more podcast.
It's essentially a Wii U gamepad.
Mm.
I've seen people go like, oh, sometimes, you know, the wife wants to watch TV, so this is cool because I can play a PlayStation game in the other room. And it's like, I guarantee you've already got maybe four different ways in your house of doing that with things that you already have.
Right. Yeah, because like, I guess if you look at it as like a... PS5 controller is about $100, and so this is a $250. We're talking Australian.
Yeah.
Oh, we're talking Australian.
Oh, brother.
Oh, good day.
Can't we be talking Australian?
It's a $250 like wireless monitor.
Yes. Yep.
Plus controller attached. They're targeting the battery life of the like a similar thing to the DualSense about that time, which I found to be unusually low for a controller.
Yeah, not that good.
In my experience. So,
but also, if you can only play it at home, you can just plug it in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
to the charger.
The battery, that is a thing. Yeah, you're right. The battery life is kind of almost irrelevant because you can't ever take it very far away from a PowerPoint.
And I love picking up the Switch and walking around, crashing into shit.
Brother, me too.
And like playing it somewhere in the house. So I do get the appeal of this like form factor.
Mm.
It's just... it's a shame that it's limited to the Wi-Fi thing and not and to the capabilities that some streaming things are, which also have not worked super well for me ever.
Yeah, too. Well, because that's the thing. You spend $350 on this thing and then if your home internet is down for whatever reason, you can't use it. You can't play your games in your own house.
Your internet, would it matter if your internet was cut out or just if the Wi-Fi router wasn't working?
I was talking about this with a friend over the weekend and we couldn't Yeah, we didn't know. It was a long conversation.
Both of you just got like, maybe neither of you whipping out the phone. And
it was literally the walk from my house to the MCG, and we could not get to the bottom of it by the time we got to our destination.
I would imagine it doesn't matter if you're actually connected online any further than the PS5 needs to be connected online, because they have also said the like PS3 streaming and the streaming things that you can get with like the PlayStation Plus extra premium. Packages,
the cloud stuff.
Those won't be doable on
this. Cloud stuff and no Bluetooth as well.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
So you have to use those headphones, right?
And Bluetooth headphones have always been too laggy for me with games anyway when I've used them for stuff. So like it's not like crazy, I don't think, this thing.
It's just a real luxury on top of a luxury.
It's quite
right?
specific.
Yeah, it's a thing where it's like if it came packaged in with a PlayStation 5 as like the second controller. And it, and you go, oh, cool, like kind of what the, you know, they just botched the messaging of the Wii U. Mm. But that concept of being able to play in your house away from the TV if someone else is using the TV, that is still, that's kind of what a lot of people just use their Switch for. Like they're not even taking it outside of the house. So it is a cool thing conceptually. But this kind of feels, because Sony aren't a company that are concerned with what their things cost. You know, they've got a VR headset that's like $800. They're not,
which to be fair is a relatively good price for what that thing is capable of. The problem with that thing is more about the game selection.
No, totally. But I mean, a company like Nintendo, they really want to keep their costs down because they're targeting families and they're targeting younger people. Sony have always been more on the side of we want the best tech in our things. Like they're not, they don't seem as concerned with something coming out at a higher price point. Because they sort of, I feel like they do treat themselves as sort of like a luxury brand. Mm.
So well, I guess they have measured themselves against Microsoft.
Yeah.
And that's the thing of like, well, can we get away with it being $50 more if it's, you know, 5 times as powerful? You know, like that's their reasoning usually.
And that feels like what this is as well on at least a concept page is like Microsoft is pushing Play Anywhere.
Yeah. Mm.
And so we need a screen that they can take away from the PlayStation.
Yeah.
It just, I think the people who are interested in this would also be interested in one that was $100 or even $200 more that had like a streaming capability like that Logitech thing
that came out, the cloud.
Yeah. Whatever, and some storage.
And some. Right?
That's exactly what I'm saying though. Like they aren't concerned with like, tipping into a higher price point. So it's weird to me that they didn't spend a little bit more time making this just basically a PlayStation 4, because so many of the games that are coming out are still last gen. If they went, this little thing, you can take it with you and it can play your PS library up to these. The PS5 exclusives won't work on it, but everything up to there, you can take your library with you.
But then that, it get like, that's like a Vita almost.
Yeah.
Like a Vita 2. And I think that,
and then maybe remote play for a PS5.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure how much it would benefit them to be like to have a lower powered console handheld thing at the moment. That obviously they're not interested in that because they've not made it.
When yeah.
they have the opportunity, I guess, in terms of like a marketing cycle and whatever that they're doing with this thing. It really is just, if your screen is a family screen and you don't want to plug your PS5 in a different room,
right?
Yep.
Here you go.
Well, this is,
and
I
if
mean,
you're a millionaire.
Yeah. yeah
well, this you, is the thing that's like been kind
or
of changed
a stupid
about
poor
the
person like myself. I'm not having a go at anybody else. That is purely an inwardly targeted comment.
Yeah, but you also don't have to share your screen. So it's unnecessary.
I know. But, you know, I don't have a screen in every inch of my house. I do have a screen in every inch of my house.
Because this is the hard thing, is that the ecosystem of being a handheld has changed so much with the Switch and now the Steam Deck, where, you know, 10 years ago it would have been a company had their console library and then they had their handheld library.
Right.
And now, like, if they came out and went, this is a handheld and we're going to bring out a mini God of War for it and a mini whatever, like people would like, I think those days are over. Like you can't do that now.
I think
so if you're
going
to make a handheld, it has to be, you can take these home, you can take these same home games on the go with you. There's no such thing as the like dedicated mini handheld experience anymore.
And I'd imagine if they had something that's like, it's like a PS4 in your hand, they would have some blowback to that too, of like similar to what the Series S is getting a little bit now with the Baldur's Gate 3 stuff, which they figured out, by the way.
Or they let them off with it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had a meeting at like Gamescom, and it seems as though that meeting went, hey, Phil, you want this game on your shit, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, then here's the only option.
Yeah.
And so just you can't do co-op on a Series S, which makes sense. That's a good solution.
Like, totally. Yeah. Totally. It's dumb that they made such a hard and fast rule initially. It's like you've just hamstrung yourself.
It seems somewhat short-sighted, perhaps. But if they then allow for different versions on different consoles, it becomes confusing and a different thing, but also the solution to that problem going forward, maybe. Yeah, right. I don't know. This thing's like for a very specific group of people. And I guess they are only making the case for that. Maybe that's part of the thinking behind it, is like it's not confusing what it is.
True.
It's confusing why it is, maybe to some extent. But it they've made it very clear what this thing's capable of.
I just still do feel like you've got, if you are that person who wants to play off the TV, away from the TV for whatever reason, you've got a wireless controller. You've got a phone, you've got an iPad. You probably do, if you're someone who can afford this, you probably do already have four different things in your house. Like, you can get a wireless controller, pair it to your iPad, get the PS Remote Play app, and do that.
Yeah.
Which is a bigger screen. Like, you've got, if you can afford this and you're looking at this luxury, you have the means to do this already, and you've probably figured that out if it's an issue too.
And I guess it's always good to have options. It's just, what hole is this filling?
Yeah.
What gap is this filling?
Also, I can, you know, the form factor of having like the molded DualSense, I can see being really nice, but it looks like a prototype. It looks so weird.
It does look like one of those, like, you know, someone's photoshopped, this is the PlayStation 6.
Yes.
It's going to be a screen, and that screen can fold up and eat it. And
it looks like it was made in Tears of the Kingdom. It's just like got this unwieldy thing just like, sticking off it.
Mm.
Interested to hear about how, because if that introduces, it, like the thing over like an iPad or whatever that I could see being a benefit of it is if it is relatively low lag, low latency.
Sure.
If it isn't that, if it doesn't have that benefit to it, then yeah, truly, like why?
I guess I mean,
my sentence there. Why?
Sure, the library may not appeal to you and whatever, but yeah, when you stack it up against getting a Switch Lite, which is actually playing the games on it natively, and you can take it out of the house, it does. That does turn it into like a weird price pointed thing. But I'll be interested to hear from any of our listeners. I have seen a few people be like, yeah, this looks great, I'm going to go in.
Okay.
When's it out? Is it out soon? Or?
I think this year. I don't think it's too far away.
I think for me, it just falls in the same like category as those headphones and stuff of like, well, it's nice that Sony have made it for the people who only buy Sony stuff, but I don't really care.
Yeah.
It's a headphone jack on the PS5 controller. Like, you truly don't need separate different headphones. You can plug any in.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
but
all.
If you want a piece of tech with those, the white, sleek DualSense, it's like, well, that's the one for you.
I want to look like an Android, baby. Get me iRobot on the phone. He wouldn't talk on a phone. He'd have it built in.
Very true.
That would be so. Anyway.
He'd have Bluetooth headphones like a real estate agent.
His ears would be that.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
You think the robot would be using Bluetooth? He wouldn't be Bluetooth himself?
That's what I'm saying. He'd have
Bluetooth. He's all Bluetooth.
His teeth would be blue.
He's Bjorn Bluetooth or whatever it's named after.
Yeah, isn't it a pirate? I don't really know.
It's like a Nordic explorer or something. It's something.
Hell yeah, man. Imagine being able to bring someone back from the dead. If you just in years, a technology you didn't understand was named arbitrarily after you, the old ship of Universal Serial Bus, he'd be freaked out if he could see what happened to his name today.
Or Mr. Gran Turismo.
Oh.
Speaking of Sony making strange decisions that I'm not sure who they're for.
Young Australians have never been more lonely. Yet loneliness is rarely discussed and often misunderstood. Season 2 of the We Are Lonely podcast is a part of Medibank's 10-year commitment to reduce chronic loneliness in Australia.
Follow the journey of four diverse 20-somethings on their search for connection.
It's shocking enough to know that half of us will feel lonely this week, but it may surprise you more to learn that young adults are some of the loneliest people in Australia.
If we learn to understand and manage feelings of loneliness, it can be a normal part of the spectrum of human emotions.
Just as we all get hungry or thirsty, we all get lonely. It's a normal part of being human.
But if it becomes chronic, it can have the same impact on us as smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
Over this six-part reality podcast series, four young people meet with mentors and experts who will help them build strategies to reconnect.
Through their stories, we understand the reality of loneliness in Australia, experienced by a generation that theoretically has never been more connected.
Follow four vastly different young adults as We Are Lonely unpacks the complexity of emotions that come with this formative period in our lives.
We Are Lonely is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Search for We Are Lonely and listen today.
I guess, Grant, I don't know if it's doing well, the movie, but we all saw Gran Turismo, the film as well.
Yes.
I was telling a friend about how I saw Gran Turismo.
Mm.
They were like, oh, yeah, what did you think? And I was like, yeah, you know, it's a blah, 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 it's about racing. And they're like, yeah, I guess so. And kept talking about it. Gran Torino is a film about race. So we talked for quite some time, thinking, not understanding which movie either of us were talking about.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
We should come back after Ben's back and do a side-by-side episode where let's all watch Gran Torino and go through the similarities and differences between those two films.
You'll be happy to know I had drinks with Timothy Clark the other night and said I'm going to see Gran Turismo, and he said, well, I understand that if I haven't seen Gran Torino. So, you know, it's out there. It's amongst the public.
It can be a deliberate for comedy misunderstanding or an accidental for extended conversation where we're both going, what?
I was late to a lunch with friends because I went and saw it in the movie, and I'd done the like, okay, lunch is at this time. I looked up the runtime of the film and then just got absolutely slammed with ads before the film.
Not even
I like watching a trailer, but this was just like, ads for like Uber and real estate and just like all this shit piling on.
Yeah, it's very backwards, this movie, because it's the trailer and then the car.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gran Torino.
Now, before we get into the film itself, I want to know if you guys had the same experience as me before the film in the cinema. Because often...
Almost certainly not.
Or like often... You know, a movie will have like, doesn't matter where you see it, it's got all the same sort of stuff preloaded before it.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is what happened for me. Few ads and stuff, lights down. First thing that comes up, static image of the logo for the Equalizer 3 and a QR code that said, ooh, watch the trailer now. And I was like, I'm here.
That's
why
bizarre.
Don't you? And then it wasn't like it was straight into the film. It was then just like 10 minutes of trailers.
Mm.
And it was like, so what? I'm meant to scan the QR code and then sit here on my phone watching the trailer for the Equalizer 3 on my phone while the trailer for the Blue Beetle plays in full stereo in this room?
I saw the trailer for Equalizer 3.
What the hell's going on?
Yeah.
I've never seen this
before.
What
cinema?
I went to the Village Cinemas at the Jam Factory.
Oh, that's right. I saw it at a Hoyts.
I'm a Hoyts man.
Yeah, right.
I'm a village bitch.
Yeah, you are the village bitch.
I was just like... Is this meant to be I scan it and save it for later? Because I think I can figure out getting onto YouTube and looking up the trailer for The Equalizer 3 if I really want to.
Yeah.
I was just like, on this huge
Zoomers
screen.
They need two things happening at all times.
On this massive screen being like, hey, scan this and have a look on your phone. It's just like, this is bizarre.
It's stupid.
Scan this QR code so you can play Subway Surfer while you watch these trailers.
Well, speaking of Zoomers,
this
movie is about people zooming around.
Yeah, yet again had that thing because this is, I think, only the second PlayStation Studios movie after Uncharted.
Yeah, we did no research, but we all kind of agree that that's the case.
That's the only one we've seen. And then Last of Us as well.
It didn't use the logo.
It did for me.
It did. It definitely did.
Because I remember finding it weird again that it's like, oh, yeah, there's Kratos. And
that didn't
Nathan
play
Drake
for me.
You fucking, I don't know which pirated cinema you went to here.
Yeah.
That QR code was a virus that they were going to install on your phone.
Yeah.
Damn. Were there lots of like little yellow guys running around in your film? Like the ones that are on your auntie's Facebook
Everyone
page?
In the cinema was in suits.
It definitely played. Little blue thing, Nathan Drake coming up.
The sounds and shit.
I know I sound crazy, but I didn't, because that was the, I was like, oh, here we go. I'm going to get the little thingy.
Yeah,
and
it didn't show up. It was really exciting to see as well.
Wow.
It's so stupid.
It's really dumb.
The first like Sony-ish thing that happened, and this happens a few times in the film, when like a thing will come up on the screen and it's the like accessing the menu sound yes. from the PlayStation.
There's a lot of which I thought was so weird. They've got the Gran Turismo. We won't spoil the movie. It is based on a true story.
Yeah.
To the point where the actual title of the movie is Gran Turismo : based on a true story.
Yeah.
Which is really funny to me. You've got to put the cell in the title.
I would argue that the movie is unspoilable because it's like you can hear the broad strokes of what this is about and write this movie in your head.
It's a very formulaic movie. I ended up enjoying it more than I thought I would, and the amount I thought I would was like negative.
So
I let myself get swept away in the
product,
you know, the time-tested construction of a film.
Yeah,
you know?
I hated it. I thought I would think it was fine, and like I actually thought this like that story, the real life story. I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Mm. And then as a movie, I just hated it. It was just an ad. It was just an ad for Nissan's and Gran Turismo, the game.
Yeah.
And they just, it was so obvious. And it was like, oh, because like there would be points where people were like, oh, it's, I don't know, man, you're just a gamer. And then they're like, no, it's a real sim.
Yeah.
But I found that funny where it's like the movie it is like, constantly going like, playing games is a waste of time. Playing games is a waste of time. And then by the end, they're like, the only good thing you did was learn how to really race. Playing games was still a waste of time in some ways.
It's funny. So David Harbour's character in it, he's this like mechanic who's... let's just say what the film basically is.
It's based
on a true story. We meet this kid, Yan.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He's a Gran Turismo obsessive. He wants to be a real race car driver. He loves playing Gran Turismo because of the realism. Meanwhile, Orlando Bloom... he goes to the Japan offices of Nissan. Mm-hmm.
He's a marketing executive.
Exec, and he shows up for this like pitch meeting to them, and he rocks in. There's like no one has shown up to this presentation. There's like eight of them in this huge theater. Mm.
They're
in this massive theater. He's there trying.
It's like
to convince,
he's doing a TED talk.
Yeah,
yeah.
But he's there trying to convince them of this idea that he's had, where he's like, "Let's find a gamer and turn them into a real racer, and that's gonna reignite the passion for like the open road in our customers." But he's like doing this presentation where he's taken his jacket off and he's just dumped all his shit at the front of the stage. He just left all this mess just on the stage in front of him. He's kind of erratic.
It's
and
weird
he's like,
that they're all sitting quite. Towards the back of the theater, too.
Yeah.
He does look like he's on cocaine. He
looks
disheveled. Back hair.
He just left all this mess on the stage. Then he finishes the presentation and he's left all his shit in there.
Yep.
So someone has to come back and be like, oh, you left all your files. By the way, we're in.
Yeah.
It's like, why would they be captivated
by this
man?
No, that was like a George Costanza, like leave a belonging behind after you sleep with someone.
Oh, the game. Yeah.
Well, it's actually a simulation. But he's like...
And the fact that it really happened as well, it's like... How did that? It mustn't have happened like this.
I think it's a bit of a story liberty to make him seem like this is his last shot at.
Yeah,
they got to give him a bit of character because he's like,
this
in reality,
maverick.
He's like this probably very dry marketing guy.
He's
like,
desperate to make
this
work
an email.
Out. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and then
because he's like, there's so many gamers who like to race games.
But he goes,
let's make them buy a car.
Kids don't care about cars anymore, but they do care about games. And then he does the fingers joining. Open the church, here's the people.
The start of his pitch is like him telling them about what Gran Turismo is in a real, and it's obviously it's like for the audience of the film.
Right.
But in the reality of this film, it's like they know.
Yeah, dude.
They work in Japan for a car company. Like
we've been playing it since the PS1.
Yeah.
He gets up to the whiteboard, he writes car, and then he writes an S and a dollar sign.
I actually prefer a Assetto Corsa, so
We speak Japanese.
The guy's probably in there who's been liaising directly with Sony about the like how their cars run. He's like, no, I know who the creator is. I know what this game is.
I'm sure that's where the idea came from.
Yeah.
Like they were already collaborating.
Look, and it would be illegal in a race, but it's real. It's okay in a movie. It does take a lot of shortcuts like that. You're not allowed to take a shortcut.
No, you're not. No.
You can drive quick, though, and that's the idea. And so Yan's really good at driving quick in the game.
Yep.
He gets involved in this thing that they're doing where they'll take the best lap times of a few different gamers.
Yeah, people who are just playing online and stuff.
His best lap time is registered at the internet cafe, not at his home console.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's like they play this video. I don't know how true to life this bit is, but it's like this fucking like Mission Impossible tape delivered to him in the game where it's like, you're one of the select few people getting to see me in Orlando Bloom.
It's really Wonka shit.
It's
like,
Orlando
if you're seeing
Bloom,
this,
the marketing executive, not someone else.
Who's
a driver.
Yeah, good point.
Some face of the company. Why is it Orlando Bloom's character?
I think the difference between mine and Tommy's experience of going like, okay, and yours may have been that at the movie's behest early on, I switched my brain quite far of the way off.
Yeah, I'd started to just take it for what it, I think taken for what it is.
Yeah.
Like, I can imagine it being a
I
good film.
I took it
film.
For what it was, a terrible film. And I don't like terrible films.
I think it's a good, I could see it being, if you were a little kid, as like a first, because it's very like sports movie. It's all the tropes of that. Yes. This was like kind of your first, like one of them, follow your dreams, you can do anything kind of thing. I could see it being kind of interesting a bit of fun.
Yeah. The disapproving father.
It's a real family movie type of thing that the dad doesn't believe in him.
He doesn't know what games are.
It's so funny
he understands the dad, professional sports fully.
Exactly. Yes. It's not like the kid's upstairs like playing with Barbie dolls. It's like, no son of mine is going to be involved in the really pretty cool world of competitive race car driving.
He's literally like, no, you should work on the actual railroad.
Yeah.
Like, it's full on.
And also, he's like, let's kick a ball around.
Yeah.
Like my other son, right?
The other son's a soccer kid and he was a soccer dad. It goes through those motions from there of like, you know, the coach guy, he had something that made him stop racing, but he could have been a star. Again, based on true stuff, I haven't looked up too
much
about true.
Yeah, so David Harbour plays the mechanic who Orlando Bloom goes to him and he's like, here's what we're going to do.
He's at the bottom of the list of people who he was going to ask, like, we need a mentor for these kids.
Yeah.
This is the idea. Can you train this guy up? And he's like, I think you're crazy, but God damn it, I'm in. There's a great bit where before his like qualifying game, they're all out at this party and he gets pulled over by the cops and he's like, I can't miss the race. And he decides to like gun it out of there, which look, I didn't look into this, but this was the first bit where I'm like, absolutely no way this happened in real life. But like, so he's like, you know, he's driving the car, he's like trying to evade the cops. And then it cuts to like the video game screen as if, and it's like, no, we got it.
Those are the parts of the movie I didn't like. It reminded me of The Beach when he's like imagining he's in a game and that like, it's using the Gran Turismo looking stuff. And I always think that looks cheesy. I've never seen that done well.
I thought the
not when it's a literal video game, especially.
And it just like, it just feels weird. I did for some reason like the little sounds, the Gran Turismo sounds playing, because like in the middle of a race, it'll show that he's in fifth place, which I think you need to do in a racing movie. Like you need to commute. And I didn't mind that stuff of like it freeze framing for a second and going boom and showing like he's in fifth. Like that stuff worked fine. But
I
like,
probably would like that more in like other real racing films, like a Ford versus Ferrari. Like, in a context.
Any sports movie, it helps to, especially, you know, when it's a sport that not everyone's familiar with, which can be any sport, like conveying the stakes in a digestible way for the layman. I reckon that's cool.
That's good movie making.
That was my main takeaway from this film was like, damn, I should watch that Drive to Survive show. Because like I did think all the racing stuff in this was done really well. Like the bits of drama that happen on the track and they kind of, they frame that really well where he's like, you know, he's communicating with David Harbour who's on the, you know, who's off to the side. But it really does make it seem in slow motion like he's just sitting in this quiet room talking when it's like, no, he's going incredibly fast.
They set up a very funny rival racer.
Oh. I love this in any sports movie. It's just like anyone who happens to be doing the same thing as you is a fucking asshole just by default. They're always evil. They're always
mean. His car is gold.
Yeah.
And he's
yeah.
like, he.
And you can only be friends with people who are definitely worse than you at
right.
the sport.
Right. Because right. his this first rival, after he beats him, then they're like, hey, no hard feelings, right? Yeah. But before that, he was the dick. And
yeah.
But
heaven forbid there be a guy who's as good as you who's also just a good guy who wants yeah. to win. Right. It's his dream.
Imagine everyone right. being like, hey, it's just a race.
There's a great bit like early on. So he gets selected to go to this.
A boot camp.
Camp. And I liked all this kind of stuff. And Harb's really like rinsing him and giving him a hard time. And there's a bit where he kind of fucks this bit up and he's like, oh, the brake wasn't yes. working. I did brake.
Yeah.
And he like really sticks to it. And you know, they're being very, David Harb's being very like, you got to own your failure. You fucked up.
You're afraid.
There's no way you could ever know that because all you've ever done is play Pac-Man loser.
Yeah. So, yeah. Right. So he goes like, the brake was glazed. And he's like, and he's like, no, it wasn't. Well, I know from playing the video game, this isn't a fucking video game. And then he, like, the next shot is him in the workshop and the guy's like, the brake was glazed. Yeah. And he comes back and he goes, how did you know that? He's like, because I've been playing the video game and it's a simulation. It's like, David Harbour seems to at no point have been briefed about what Gran Turismo is, that it's like, no, it's a simulation. It's one for one. He thinks they've just gotten a bunch of competitive Mario Kart players. Right. It's like, how could you possibly know how a car works?
And it does that a lot.
Yeah.
The movie spends a lot of time being like, this isn't a game anymore.
Yeah. So David Harbour's character.
It's a sport.
Yeah.
His thing is like, he loves when he's working on the cars, he's got his like old school tape Walkman where he's listening to Black Sabbath.
Yes, his Sony brand Walkman.
Right, and there's a bit where they're talking about, he's like, you know, you can get a thing that plays more than four songs, and he's like, no, I like the nostalgia, I like this. And then the big thing when they're in Japan and Yan sees like a new, like an updated digital one, and it's like Sony, it like really hangs on it, and he gives it to him as his big gift, and it's like, man, fuck off. He said he likes the tape. Like, yeah. It's that like kind of insulting thing of like, no, you're not making my life better. Mm. I like vinyl, okay? I like how it sounds.
I think so this obviously happened a few years ago, this
yes.
actual story. It's happening just in today in the movie so that they can have Gran Turismo 7 be the
one
that they're showing in it. Yep. He's got the stack of all the other Gran Turismo games above his TV too. But it's sort of like, weird in that way. It works fine though as just like a nothing movie. Like I kind of enjoyed watching it. Not really, and I don't think it's good.
Everything else on a plane, then yeah. like, yeah, this will kill a couple
this
of hours.
This is a real DVD night. There's some 13-year-olds having a sleepover. What the fuck are we gonna do? Put Gran Turismo on.
It is so boilerplate. It's so tropey in every way. Which again, I kind of ended up getting into of like, oh, let me guess. There's gonna be like a conflict, like a sad thing happens where he wants to like walk away, but right. even to the point where it is a bit, it could do with like half an hour trimmed out of it. There's a,
yeah, it's
like,
2 hours long.
They
yeah.
even go to the extent of having a love interest where he's like flies her over to where he is. And it's a girl that he met once in a car park.
Yeah.
And it's like,
they haven't been speaking for like weeks.
They must have known each other for longer or something. Yeah.
But there is that bit. She was like, he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I haven't spoken to you in a bit. I've been doing this car thing. And she's like, I don't mind.
Yeah.
I don't mind being ignored. It's totally fine.
It's like this film did not need a love interest. It's still not passing the Bechdel test.
Right.
It's a film for the fellas. Just don't worry about getting the love interest in there.
I get, you know. And I assume parts of it. So I want to. There's two bits that I don't think are really spoilers, and I don't think again this is a movie you can, unlike a car, spoil.
Oh my god!
But
that's a reference to your first ever joke about a spoiler,
probably
Fast and Furious spoiler.
Oh yeah, I don't remember it.
It was like 15 years ago, and it was the first time anyone's made a joke comparing spoilers in movies to spoilers on cars.
I was a trailblazer.
It was trademarked.
Yeah.
Adam looks like he just drank a Slurpee real quick.
He's trying to remember. Or maybe he's trying not to remember.
Yeah, yeah. That's repression face.
Yeah, he's trying to Eternal Sunshine himself. Get it out of his head.
Skip ahead just a tiny bit.
Right.
Could, like, there's two bits that I think if you're keen on seeing this movie will be things that were the bits of the movie where I was like, huh.
Yeah.
So the developer, the like head guy of Gran Turismo makes a cameo that I think is so lame, because they, when they're in Japan, the couple, they're eating sushi, and they're like, this is the most incredible, delicious sushi I've ever had. Whoever created this has made something so special. The creator of this is
a genius.
A genius at making things. And the sushi chef is the guy, is the Gran Turismo guy.
I didn't pick up
and
on
there's
that
just
at all.
A shot of him going, yeah.
Yeah,
just a smile right. from him.
I didn't know that
they've
was
got
him.
Someone
like,
else in the movie weird... playing
yeah,
him.
Yeah, so he's in it as a character and he's cameos as himself.
Yeah,
I didn't know that was him at all. I was like, what a weird moment.
Yeah,
right. That's
again, when I'm like, this could do with being half an hour shorter. That bit's first on the chopping block.
Yeah, and then the ending, the very, very ending. So again, be aware if you want to. This is the ending of the thing, but I am telling you it's a spoiler, but also that it probably won't affect your enjoyment of the movie. The ending where they go do the classic biopic thing of like, and here's some photos here of the real guy.
Yeah,
is what happened to him in real life. And then they show, and also, he's raced 200 races and was the stunt driver for this movie, which is really cool, and that's nice, and that's a cool thing to do. Did they make him recreate the crash that killed a spectator?
Right.
If he was the stunt driver?
That's part, and I guess, we're within a spoilery bit. I thought the depiction of the crash was incredible.
That was cool.
The best thing in the movie. Also, it was like a really gross thing, and I guess if it happened, it happened, but of like, yeah, we're using this real person's death as motivation for you and like character development for you, this guy who plays a video game.
Yeah, I wonder, because like, it's like, so he has that crash. He's like, he kills a spectator. He's devastated by it. And he's like, that's it. I'm out. I don't want to do this. And then there's this bit where David Harbour is like, look, it wasn't your, there's nothing you could have done differently. It was a freak accident. It's a dangerous sport. It's dangerous to watch, all of that.
Plane
you cannot
off.
Blame
I mean,
yourself.
Car took off.
Yeah, yeah.
He's
like a plane.
This happened to me. This is why I walked away and I never got to, see how good I could have been. And I like all that thing of like kind of, motivating his character in the film to just be like, this wasn't your fault. You can't take responsibility. But then part of the way they get him to do that is like, it's days later and they drive him to where the accident happened and they're like, now keep driving. Now that I'm like, now that's a bit callous. That's like a kind of dodgy way of going about it.
Yeah,
I get the pep talk, but the like literally being like, this is where it happened. Now you fucking keep driving.
Yeah. It didn't strike me as like unpleasant or anything, I guess, in that way, because it's just like, what are your options in real life?
I would never do that again. Like the guy, the other character in the movie who quit racing.
Yeah.
And
it's
now has
fucked
this,
up.
Still has this cool job where he gets to be on the sidelines coaching people.
And then watch another death. Yeah. It's insane. It's insane.
Oh, that's so like the thing of the main Yan, he loves Kenny G. And he's like, so tropey. He's like freaking out mid-race and David Harbour somehow like jacks into the fucking headset and just starts blasting Enya at him.
They do that like the
turn
movie.
It off,
turn it off.
They do the movie music. Oh, it was actually in their headphones joke like a number of times.
Yes.
And for whatever reason it really played for the group of people I was watching it with.
Yeah.
Like in the movie they're like, yeah.
It's classic sports movie trope of like, the thing from before, now he's using it to motivate him. Very clever.
Was it at the bit where like he has the laptop with the brother coming and he's like, are you watching porn?
No.
That got a chuckle.
It was, I can't remember. There was one, it was like everyone laughed. I was like, what?
I also love the first race. So he like qualifies for this big, for the thing, for the thing that Nissan are putting on. So they immediately put him in like, in actual competitive races. And the first one he does, he finishes but he comes like dead last or whatever. He kind of chokes and the like Nissan mechanic guy is like, well, you finished, I didn't think you would. And it's like, bro, you work for him, like you're on this team and you're just like,
I don't believe in you.
Surely you'd get fired if you just immediately smack talk the driver, like, no, come on brother, we all got to be on the same page here.
Very silly formulaic movie in a lot of ways, Formula One like movie in a lot of ways, but like I don't know, I didn't find it offensive. I thought it was fine.
I kind of thought weirdly the thing of it being about the video game itself more interesting, and also knowing that it's a true story, I think, or like based on a true story, I think like if they had have just like scripted this, I would have. We were saying this off air, like if this had have just been completely scripted, I would have been like, this is so dumb. But knowing that it's like based in some reality, I was like, okay, this is kind of this is kind of cool, and it's cool that they've adapted this rather than just go, we're going to make a film about a bunch of people racing and then sometimes they drive to a cafe to get new instructions on where to go race.
No, I was really thinking during it, like, I would have loved to have seen the movie where it's just some people chatting about what hatchbacks are in a cafe. That would have been sick.
He goes half and half, because it is that weird thing where, like, if you love the game of Gran Turismo,
then
like
this isn't for you.
Exactly. Yeah. As much as we didn't really, like, none of us really liked the Mario movie, but you did see a lot of people online being like, oh, I loved it because I've grown up with these games and it had this little thing and it had this little thing. This is like, if you love getting into like the nitty gritty of cars and that's what you love about Gran Turismo, it's like, oh, this is a movie about a kid playing that game.
Totally.
Yeah. Who's better at it than you?
It's not a racing movie in the way that like a Ford v Ferrari or whatever was, where it's like, that was like a, I don't know, Moneyball or something, where I don't care about baseball, but that's a great movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Ford v Ferrari, I don't care about racing, but that's a really good movie.
Yeah, the conflict is there and they give you enough context for the sport itself where you're like, this is about people being obsessed with being the best.
And then those movies are also good for people who do like those things from
my understanding. Yeah.
I think if you're a big racing head, then you're not necessarily going to get your racing fix.
Yeah. Well, if you're like the said, David Harbour character, you're like, this did feel real.
Like baby's first race. Like I said, I was like, yeah, I want to get into this drive. There are a lot of elements about this. Like, I never knew, like, with Le Mans, like, it's like it's 9 hours. Like, I didn't know that, how long they're out there for. It's crazy. Yeah. Well, sorry, it gets to hour 9. Like, I was like, God damn, that's so long.
Yeah,
you got to drive for ages.
Yeah. You got to drive to survive.
Damn, that's a really good title.
Thank you. Anyway, PlayStation Studios, they've done it again.
I was also
they've replaced A24 for me. This is the new badge
must
of quality.
See, yeah.
whenever
it's doing fine, by the way. It's like opening weekend is like 17 million, so like
that it's fine as well. It's like fine. If you caught this movie on TV and dozed off halfway through, you'd be like, "Oh yeah, that was okay."
Yeah.
I was wondering every time David Harbour and Orlando Bloom were on screen at the same time, I was always thinking, like, I wonder if they bonded about how both their wives are musicians.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if that was how they bonded.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Orlando Bloom should play more, like, kind of sleazy marketing guys. I think it suits him.
Yeah.
And I thought David Harbour was charismatic and the lead guy was fine.
It'd be cool if Lily Allen and Katy Perry linked up and did a song that became, like, a mega, mega smash. And then you could trace back and go, well, you know what? That probably only happened because of this film. So, you know what I mean? It's like the husbands met on set. They linked it up. You know, they were probably like both hanging around, orbiting each other. Sometimes it's hard to get those conversations going. If they wrote the most like beloved pop song of all time and you could trace it back to it being a direct result of this movie, then it's like, okay. This is justified its existence.
I wonder if David Harbour and Alfie Allen have ever gone for the same role, but one of them got it and the other didn't. Let's start a gossip podcast.
I reckon that. If anything, they're more likely to collab on the next Menu Log song.
Yeah,
if it's in the spirit of this film. By the way, another ad.
That, like, I had such a Pavlovian...
It's not cold and it's tasting really good.
I had such a Pavlovian response to every time that PlayStation menu thing came up. Because my experience with that is it's only ever coming up as an error of like, hey, your download couldn't finish because the internet's gone down. I had such a like, every time I heard that sound in the film, I was like, something's gone wrong.
Well, I think it was just
the projector's broken.
It was the Gran Turismo sound, right? Not the like PlayStation sound.
It was originally from...
Gran Turismo menu sound.
Well, there was like the PlayStation one happened because I haven't played Gran Turismo in years and years and years. But just the one where you like hold down the home button, like the...
I thought that was the Gran Turismo.
That was
sound.
Originally Gran Turismo, and then they're now using it for the menu.
I think it's a different sound.
Well, I've not heard it in Gran Turismo. So
yeah,
I
don't have that attachment. And I definitely my little ears were ringing.
Yeah. I bet they're similar, but I think it was. But I'm not sure.
I'm 100% sure because I watched it and then I listened to it when I got home.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it's a terrible movie. It's just an ad. It offends me on an artistic sense, and I don't think people should pay money to see it.
Yeah, well, I think you should lighten up, you prawn.
Yeah, it's Neil Blomkamp.
As the director would say.
Oh, yes, yeah. Fuck, yeah.
That is the word. To go from...
I didn't know that going in as well for some reason. I kind of forgot.
I knew he was involved, but I was halfway through. I was like... Did he direct this or just like work on some of the I'd seen his name involved in it, but to go from like District 9 comes out and people are like, well, this is the new guy. Like he's really, this is so interesting and cool to like, yeah, I guess I'll take some cash to direct the racing movie where I don't really get to have much freedom. And the freedom that I do get is like, hey, make the police chase look like it's a video game.
I guess he's like always been a good CGI guy.
It looked fine. Racing and stuff looked pretty good.
The bit where he's like around the track and the other guys crashed.
The big exploding car bit looked a bit lame, but yeah.
Yeah, the bit where he's in the race at the end and that guy has that crash and he's, oh no, not again, and he's like waiting over the radio. I like all that. The actual like racing stuff was filmed pretty well, I thought. And like you said, giving you the context of where everyone is like placed. And it's kind of lame, but I honestly didn't hate the thing of like the car, just like he's trying to be like, as much as everyone's saying this isn't a game, but then his way of calming himself is to be like, it's just like the game. And the thing of like the car kind
of practice
dismantling, and he's kind of like just seeing himself as if he's just in his bedroom playing that, and then it like zooms back out. I thought that was kind of neat and sort of and like well executed technically, the thing of like the car, all the bits coming off the car.
It was a nice
little bit of flair.
It gave me real car commercial vibes.
Yeah.
Hard not to. Like it's cars.
Yeah, when you've got a car driving, that's what car commercials are.
And they're like, there's some really high budget car commercials where the fucking, you know, you see all the bits.
Well, it's a film about a marketing executive making a really long car commercial that's in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly, though, it is a thing where, I mean, maybe that's why they did this adaptation. I meant to sort of dig into how much of this has been fictionalized and then got home and realized I really don't care all that much. But it's almost like I kind of would just rather see the doco about them doing this for real. Because, like, it is you just keep forgetting because you're in the film, but it's like, it is insane that they did this, they went, let's take a gamer and turn him into an actual driver.
That is a really good point. I would much rather see the documentary.
They should have made it as a
little series or something. Yeah.
But maybe
there's just less, because I bet when you do the documentary version, it's like, then we trained him for ages to the same extent that you would a race car driver. So he knew how to drive a race car. I wonder if the guy actually did die.
Cause you're right. It'd be crazy
to put in the movie if that wasn't
the case. It's just used as character development, and there's no thing at the end of like, you know, when they're doing the like, hey, this is the real guy, isn't this cool? There's no like, oh, and you know, tragically, of course, this.
Yeah.
That's true. Maybe
it's
made up.
To like a little callous to have not included a thing about him if he was like a victim of the story.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
It could also be, this is purely speculative, one of those things where like that isn't what sort of racing companies do, because there's like a contract when you buy the ticket that like, well, you're not in danger from this.
So it would be like a waiver.
Some convoluted thing of like, well, legally we're not going to do that because it would be like I don't know. That's purely speculation.
It is odd though. I've forgotten by the end of the credits, or by the credits, like, oh yeah, this should be,
I guess, yeah. It could
I kept
be
every time David Harbour's character went, this isn't a game. There was like a 1% of me where I expected him to go, it's a movie. If they had have just on the 8th time he says that, just thrown that in, I would have been like, okay, these guys get it. They know what's going on.
How come they cast David Harbour in the car movie and not the boat movie?
Whoa, great question.
This movie should have Johnny Garage in it.
David Driveway.
A movie about Armored Corps would have to star like Leonard Hanger. Because I've been spending a bunch of times looking at my big robot in my big hangar. Changing his clothes, which are also guns.
I love big hangers, personally.
Would the character be called Martin Eccleston? M. Eck for short.
Yeah, so someone, something like Ewan McGregor.
Oh, Mech. Yeah. I see. I couldn't figure out what the fuck
Martin
you were talking.
Eccleston. And yeah. then he's like, you see at the end him like writing his name on his pilot's license. Ah, there's not enough room to write yeah. Eccleston. I'll just shorten it to Eck.
Yeah, yeah.
M. Eck. Yeah.
Call me Mac.
Robert
but
Obon.
In an accent.
Call me Mac if you're from New Zealand.
Yeah.
Big Mech game. From Software, Armored Core, if you've not played them, it's a long-running series that hasn't had an entry for like 10 years or something.
Yeah.
I never paid attention to any of the previous ones, but like the big From development over the last 10 years has put a lot more interest on this one. Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon.
I love the name.
It's a fun sci-fi name.
Yeah.
But you know it's going to be sci-fi with a little bit of a like sort of magical twist. Fires of Rubicon, huh? I'm so glad that I was paying attention to this one now because I'm having a ton of fun with Armored Core. 100 tons of fun with Armored Core 6.
Feels like it is on a lot more people's radar.
For sure.
For a variety
so
of reasons.
I'm not going to do it. And also they would just have radar.
Mechs in the City before, yeah. before we get too far away from all this kind of chatter.
Yeah. Why do robots eat burritos? Because they love Mexican food.
Yeah. Mm. Nice.
That's
nice.
Why.
Is that going to be DLC?
Yeah. And technically,
really tasteless. Really tasteless DLC. We're going to. I mean, they can put zombies delicious. In Red Dead.
That's true.
These mechs could go to Mexico.
Yeah. Or just Mad Mechs. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. I'm loving
it. It's so good.
I'm really enjoying it.
It's maybe my actual favorite game of the year so far.
Wow.
I love it. Everything about it.
Wow.
I love the visuals, the setting, the like weird sci-fi thing of like, yeah, it's a planet covered in stuff that people want and everyone's fighting over it.
People fighting over a pretend resource.
Yes.
It's a classic. Spice led the way, maybe.
Yep.
Corals here to...
Unobtainium. But yeah, I loved the MechWarrior series.
Right.
I was a big MechWarrior fan from 2 onwards. That was like the first, I think, 3D one maybe. And then like Mercenaries was an absolute classic, a favorite of mine. I've tried the more recent ones. They're not very good, or maybe they are the same as they used to be, which doesn't quite hold up in terms of modern gaming.
I think I've seen multiple people say that same sort of thing as
right
well, like
And this is not, you know, the same game by any means. It's much more action focused.
Yeah, this isn't a simulation. It's a game.
That's right. This is a podcast. But nevertheless, I think that vibe, that like customization of all the parts and the things and the weapons and the weight and the energy and all that stuff, I love.
Yeah.
Much in the same that someone who plays Gran Turismo might like. But for me, yeah, this, the overall aesthetic, the fucking corporations, the logos, the call signs. I just love everything about it. And it's fun to play.
Yeah. It's so goofy in a fun way with its presentation where you're getting like this radio play basically.
Yeah, yes.
For the most part. It's kind of reminding me of Metal Gear Solid in a way that
same.
I didn't expect.
Yeah, 100%.
Like all these like really over the top acting performances of like there's one guy from one of the factions. I forget the specific names, but it's like, "Hey there, mech guy!" Like, he's just yelling at you all the time.
Yeah.
I think that dude.
I think that's the Balam guy.
I think so.
Yeah.
Because there's also a different B one that I forget.
Right.
That anyway. It's just, it's kind of silly in a fun way and it's surprisingly present in this game that is also very segmented and very gameplay focused.
Yes.
And that gameplay is super tough at times. The bosses are really difficult.
Yeah, I'm up to the end of chapter 1, which I think people say is like it's the Margit of this game.
Yes.
It's the speed, it's the difficulty spike, sorry.
He's the skill gate they call him.
Yes. Yeah.
Which tough to open. Keep accidentally pulling even though it says push. But it's like a point where you've got to start fucking with the design of your mech. So the what you're doing in the game, I guess we should say, is piloting a mech. You have not quite simulation controls, but some pretty complex controls that are halfway between being like a character-based action game and feeling like you are piloting something in a really satisfying way. All of your shoulder buttons correspond to different weapon slots basically on your character. You've got a left arm, a right arm, a left shoulder, a right shoulder. And like Tekken, you're like using a button for each limb.
Yes.
And then you can also customize like the head, body, and legs of your mech.
And arms. Like,
oh, damn. And your arms.
And like your engine, your like operating system.
Yeah.
A bunch of boosters. Yep.
And you've got a lot. It's so far a really I'm only a bit further than that boss, and it took me fucking ages to do that boss and a lot of reconfiguring. But it seems like it's really well made in the way that like every different option you have for each of those things is not necessarily better or worse than others. They've all got pros and cons. It's a real push-pull, and like you can only put so much stuff on there before it'll be like, well, now you're overloaded with power because like you can't have fucking 50 laser cannons. Fuck
yeah, you. You'd need more batteries.
You got to have bigger batteries.
Yeah.
So like the building of your mech is really cool because you are encouraged by the fact that most of these things are viable to experiment with it and figure out something that works well for you, because like you can build a type of mech where it's impossible to keep track of what's reloading when and makes it harder to know what you're doing. Or you can simplify it, but then maybe you're not as versatile.
But then maybe you're lighter and you're faster. Like right.
There's heaps of depth to it so far, and it's really quick to just go and experiment with your build. I like that in the shop menu to put together your mech, you can just push a button and then it's like, okay, we'll go try that out.
Yes.
And that I'm having a good time with building my guys, because each of the legs especially are very different movement types that you get, like a walker, normal thing, backwards turkey legs guy who they can jump a bit higher and that. You get a tetrapod, four legs.
Yeah.
And those guys can hover.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get your big fucking tank who's not as mobile, but it will allow you to put more shit on it. And it's like, yeah, got some benefits like that. You can make a big fucking literal tank of a guy.
Yeah.
All of that customization stuff is overwhelming a little bit at first. There's lots of different stats. But quite quickly and through, there's some pretty useful tutorials. Once you get your head around it, which doesn't take too long, it is really actually customizable and satisfying to do, and really quick and easy to swap things out.
And from what I understand, I'm very early on in this. Like, I'm kind of finding what I find with a lot of mech stuff, where I like it more in theory than in execution.
Right.
I kind of always find that thing where I'm going in thinking, oh, cool, you pilot this big mech and you're just shooting stuff down and you're going to feel really powerful. And then there just always is something about the, like, how to describe it, like you're just kind of shooting off into the distance and you're not really feeling like any of this stuff is connecting. That's okay. Kind of what I've found with it so far, that it's not having that, like,
maybe you're too impact. Far away from the enemies.
I'm just finding that, like, the like, I don't know, like the visual language of it, of like it just doesn't feel like you're hitting stuff yet in a satisfying way. I also am incredibly early on in it. I haven't played much of it at all. And I also don't know if I have it in me to commit to this at this point in time, given what I've already got on the plate and what's also about to come out.
Even though it has gotten a lot more attention because of like Elden Ring and whatever being massive, it is still very much doing its own specific thing. It isn't like a Souls game, and it is very like definite in what it is doing. And if it doesn't gel with someone, then it won't.
But this, what I was going to say was, from what I understand, the customization is like, it's not like you make your thing and then that's your thing. You are going to have to fuck around with it in between every mission. So there's no locked
much.
And loaded, like, this is my guy, this is my stats I want, I'm prepared to just like barrel through with this character that I've made. It is making you in between each mission go, There's no one size fits all approach. You are going to have to like mix it up in between missions, which is cool. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, and I think all of them are sort of viable or whatever, but different situations you will be benefited from certain types of builds or whatever.
And it's also more like as you progress, you unlock the better version of each thing as well. It's similar to an RPG where it's like, oh, well, I just got a sick new sword, I'll start using that sword. Yep. But yes, like you say, Nox, there will be, you can make one to your playstyle and essentially stick with a, you know, a version or a theme, I guess, where you upgrade those ones as they progress. But I think it's more with the bosses where it's like, well, this boss is strong against these things and weak against these things, so you're just gonna find it takes, you know, 50 tries if you stick to what you want to use versus adapting to what might be better suited to scenario.
Totally. Use this thing. Because like the sort of second major boss has this shield a lot of attacks that will keep going at you. So the thing I kind of had at first was a little more nimble and maybe doing less damage but able to dodge better, but I found it hard to dodge this guy's attack, so I ended up making a literal fucking tank that was just about dealing as much damage to him as quickly as possible, and it helped a lot.
Right.
And it was really cool to sort of figure that out. You can go into the shop and sell anything that you already own for the purchase price, I believe.
Yeah, I think
so. You can pretty much swap out whatever you've got.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
At any time. But I'm also finding that I just want to collect everything too. That's kind of fun. Because the actual game is you zipping around really quick in this with this robot. You've got like kind of a boost dodge to the side, but it's not like a Souls dodge or anything where you've got some like invincibility to it. You can't dodge through attacks in that way.
No.
So you have to use cover, and there's like a shield that you can learn to use and stuff like that.
You have a stamina bar basically, but that controls your vertical boost, your left and right dodge, your like assault boost thing.
Yeah.
And so part of it is it's like a very much a 360 degree combat thing where not only can you be surrounded or, you know, approach and flank enemies, you can go up, you can go down, you can go along the ground undercover and then burst up. You can and combine that level of movement with these different like weapon loadouts, you can approach each situation in a way that might be dumb. And you might find it really hard, and then you might go like, oh, why don't I like go essentially underground and pop up and use my missiles and get behind this turret? And, you know, it's got such a flexibility to the combat, which I find really appealing.
Yeah, I like it too, because it responds to it, which is really satisfying, because you're like kind of auto-targeting for the most part. Mm-hmm. Like you're not having to first-person shooter carefully aim, which makes sense because a mech would have targeting things in real life. but it works. The UI is like so weird looking at first. There's a lot going on, and it seems like it's taking up a lot of the screen. But then once you kind of adjust, everything there is actually quite useful.
Yeah,
like having your like ammo trackers right there in the middle of the screen.
Yeah, on the crosshair helps. Basically. Yeah, yes.
This massive circle crosshair that's like heaps of the screen.
Yep.
So the game is very much asking you to figure out its terms and come to it.
Mm.
And then when you do, you have a lot of options within the thing that it is doing.
Mm.
I found it really satisfying. It's fast and snappy and like big and loud and fun. The missions are quite short for the most part.
Mm.
So like going in and just quickly wiping up these people, and then you can go back and replay any of those missions at any time to try and get more money and get more better score and whatever.
Yeah.
It's cool to be able to do that. I do also kind of wish maybe stupidly that there was some kind of like, well, let me go on a sortie, which is what they call going on a mission, your sortie.
Yes.
And I know the military use that word, but it is a weird word that I don't even quite know how to say.
Sortie. Yeah, chuck some sortie. Beans. Chuck some beans and some garlic in a wok. Sortie it up.
It would be cool if there was like, oh, I need more money, let me go on like some kind of side-generated mission or something, you know?
Because like, well, they have the arena, which I love as well.
The arena is really fun.
It's like, you know, VR... I mean, in-game, like virtual dogfighting, I guess you'd call it. Death matches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you're a mercenary and you're fighting other mercenaries, basically, who put their hands up in this arena. And I love the way it's doing the mercenary thing of like, everyone's calling you a dog.
Yeah.
And every single person involved in this conflict is all hiring you to fight the other team.
Oh, man.
All at the same time.
Yeah, it's great. It's so like, you have no ethics.
No, you're this completely fucked up, like like playing each side against each other.
And I think also it works because you are a blank canvas of a character.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really have any character to you. You never hear yourself speak.
Right.
The story is starting to introduce patches of, like, I don't know what the answers to them are, but mysteries of, like, you know who he was, right? Or whatever.
Mm. Right.
So
right.
They're, it's going in a direction, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also breeze by it and just do these missions, because replaying the missions is fine and having an auto-generated thing wouldn't matter. It's just when you're going in the missions, it is the story thing from back then too, so you'll
be sure it's all repeating, right?
Yeah But and then try and get an S rank and shit, which would be extremely hard. I am not getting anywhere near to that if I go back and replay the missions.
Right. What is I've not, does it give you a score on first?
No, you've got to replay, right, and then it'll give you the rank. You're slowly unlocking more and more, including the multiplayer, which is not there from the start, I don't believe. Mm. So I don't know at what point of the game that shows up, but it's also kind of cool that it is like really making sure that you're across what
you
should be doing in this game. But I'm looking forward to doing some of that, because the amount of like visual customization you can give your mechs is really cool too.
Yeah, I've seen a few floating around. Someone made like a big Kirby one that looks pretty cool.
Classic. I want to make an Optimus Prime.
Sure.
I want to make every Evangelion and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You can, yeah.
I don't recall seeing like a draw your own little emblem thing for quite some time.
Yes.
Right.
Just the pixel grid of like, go and draw a penis.
Mm-hmm.
lots of different colors and messing around with your color scheme and everything on your mech, and your damage amount and all that stuff is fun.
Yeah, I love it.
The physical parts are all, you know, how they look for what you've got equipped, but that also is fine and makes sense.
Yeah.
There's some ability to share those as well. I don't know if that is contained within the game, because when I've gone to look for it, it brings up a thing almost like Mario Maker used to have, where it's like, okay, put in the code. Maybe expects you to go and share your codes on other websites and whatever, and that's how to download them. And maybe that gets around the thing of like, you can have a penis, but we're not having anything to do with it.
Yeah, right. We're not circulating it.
Because once you, as you beat people in the arena, you get their like preset entire thing. So like
CPU people.
And so you can just like copy and paste, and it'll be like, oh, you don't have enough, you don't have all the parts, but it'll like give you their emblem and their paint.
Oh, cool.
All of that stuff.
You badge them.
One of them looks close enough to Optimus Prime, which is what made me think I should make Optimus Prime.
Right. But yeah, I assume also, yeah, if you can do that with user-generated stuff, that's sick. I'll be doing a lot of my own. I really like customization of this kind, and
it's pretty fully featured.
It's really deep. So I'm loving that aspect of it, and it just feels fun to me to fly around and optimize it to your playing style. It's weirdly feels like a bit of a throwback too. I guess the like simple structure of like, you got three missions to choose from, but you're going to have to do them all at one point. They give you some money. They give you some rep. They progress this very, it's very like cyberpunk, very sci-fi, like corporations battling it out. They don't care about anyone. There's a revolutionary group, but you work for them. You're working, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's just it's my shit.
It's really cool, and like, it's not the most maybe like technically visually impressive game.
Right.
Like, it, you know, it's got really big areas and all of that is cool, but everything on like a detail level is fairly flat-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But aesthetically, like design-wise, it's crazy that it looks so good, because it is all gray and all like very, you know, it doesn't look drab for whatever reason, even though it's like doing a pretty muted color palette for the most part.
It's similar to Nier Automata.
Yes, it's reminded me of that too.
Yeah, because it is literally like a half destroyed planet. Lots of giant, like the scale of it is awesome. There's like a mission early on where you like take down this thing called a Strider.
Yeah.
And it's just like a big old six-legged machine.
Walking
big
through the
spice
desert.
Harvester scale sort of thing.
And it like, it does have that structure of like, it feels like a PS3 game that felt like a PS2 game, but also controls really well, if a little sort of complicated at first to maybe get your head around, being good at it initially, because I also was trying to dodge through things, which doesn't work. And you've got to, you've really got to go like, what does this game want me to do?
Yeah, you got to play only this game for like 3 days in a row.
Right. Yeah.
And we're all still fairly on, but I don't have any reason to think that it's going to get suddenly worse.
No. Harder for sure. And that's like, it again, that is like very throwbacky in the way that the other From games were, of like, you just got to get better at it.
Yeah.
And
it's unforgiving about it. Yeah. And like, it really is like, and the feeling after beating that boss, who's like the Margit equivalent, kind of like, fucking hell, okay, here we go. I had to turn it off for the rest of the day because I was just fucking drained from it, but in a satisfying way.
Right.
Where I was like, oh, it. Yeah, it
time for an ice bath.
It's got that really satisfying thing where you properly feel like you were good at it when you do something.
Because you really earned it. You didn't just get lucky.
Yeah. And going in and having the design of your mech be such a crucial factor in that is fun. I'm really enjoying the game.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, you're right. You feel like you've figured it out. In multiple ways, yeah.
And it's just so, like, fast and...
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, with regards to sort of, like, the visuals and the level of detail and stuff,
yeah,
if they've sacrificed some of that to make it run the way it does...
So smooth.
Load to, like, especially with the bosses, you're just, like, bang, straight back in.
Yeah.
Really smooth. And, yeah, all of the loading stuff is just... basically instantaneous.
It's pretty funny how it has the thing of like there's a loading bar that gets, you know, one little block and then goes boom and it's done. Like you don't even see it move. It just goes duk, duk, and like there's a screen there, but it doesn't take long. And it's not in the way because you're going back to the menu heaps. It's really unique and individual and just, super fun for me. And I think in one way kind of accessible, and it's like a big action game that I think anyone could probably not be turned off by, but then in another way it is also doing very much what it's doing only. So it might be something that isn't necessarily, if it's not to your tastes, then it never will be. Probably.
And I think having being a fan of the MechWarrior series, but also like the like echoes of F-18 Eagle or whatever it was called, and the Ace Combat series, and like, and being like, no, I want a bunch of shit on the screen because it's not messy, it's telling me what to do.
Totally. And like the feeling of you're controlling this thing as a pilot is conveyed, even though, but like it's halfway between being like an old Mech Warrior or like Heavy Gear and those ones back then, and almost like a Bayonetta Devil May Cry thing in like somewhere at a midpoint between those, leaning towards the MechWarrior thing, with the sort of, you can have a bunch of different viable play styles. That is something that I feel carries over from the Souls games and the Elden Ring type stuff. Like, there's a lot of different things you can use, and all of them work if they suit you and you know how to use them.
It's also, I think, differentiates itself from the MechWarrior games in that the combat is not... It is fast-paced. It is, like, I've seen it compared to Returnal. Like, it is a third-person bullet hell game in many elements, especially the boss battles. So, again, that could be a huge turnoff for someone.
Yeah.
Mm. And it is the most difficult aspect of the game. But as with a Returnal, it's been worth persevering because, like you say, the satisfaction of succeeding is high.
Totally, because you do need to get used to it, and it is frustrating when you're not. Like, because you get staggered if you get hit enough at once, you will, like, shut down for a second, and there's no more annoying feeling in the world than being like, okay, fuck me then. All right. And, like, you really can, from the bosses especially, take a lot of damage quickly and just be fucking it up.
Yeah.
But
that might be the worst feeling in video games, like getting knocked down and having that, like, couple of seconds of getting back up, like, and you're taking damage while you're doing it.
All these missiles are just hitting me.
And but the good thing about this one, I guess, is when it happens, it's like, I should have gone the other direction.
Yeah.
I should have been hiding behind this thing. I should have already been out of the range of that. Like, you know what you'd fucked up about it. Because, like, you get the shields that you get are, like, the moment you bring them up, they're more effective. So it's kind of like a parry thing that you have to be, and you still take a bit of damage from that, but it really reduces it if you do it right. Fucking up the timing on that, is frustrating, which means that when you get it, feels great.
Yeah,
2 out of 10.
Great. Well, that's going to do us for this week. We'll be back next week with a big old Starfield wrap-up.
Yes.
Well, not wrap-up, but some first impressions.
I will have played it the whole game. I got the early access thing.
Yeah, me too.
So, same. Yeah, we'll have a few days to pour into it before the app, which is good.
Ending your, you know, like you said, you're going on holiday for a bit, but we'll be doing that over Zoom. And if the Xbox streaming stuff works.
Yes, I'll get to try that out. Compare it to the PlayStation Portal. I assume it's going to be okay. I've tried it at home and my internet is Australian, so it is not fast enough. But I'll be taking my MacBook and my Elite controller.
Let's give it a go.
Yeah.
I have a feeling it's going to be... Yeah, I have a feeling you'll be able to do enough of it.
Yeah.
Certainly like the early stuff where you just, you know, being tutorialized and walking around and
that's
stuff
true.
Shouldn't be too tricky to get through.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
Massive seeming game. Early impressions aren't out as of time of recording, but seem positive from tiny bits of whisper.
Yeah, I wonder when... I guess reviews will probably drop before that early access thing, right?
Yeah,
they'll be up by even maybe the time this podcast is live.
A thing with... there was a thing one of the Bethesda execs saying during the week that it can take about 130 hours to really get into the game. And I was like, I got to tell you, that's sounds like an impressive soundbite if you're an exec, but I don't know that that's the thing that makes me excited to play a game.
There's been a lot of them lately. I want to try and finish up Baldur's Gate 3 and play more Armored Core, but I'm really looking forward to seeing Starfield.
I'm pissed off that I can't play more Armored Core, honestly. Canceling my holiday.
Yeah.
That's bullshit. Yeah,
Can I go to the cockpit? Because I actually know a few things about how to work something like this. So,
what kind of shoulder cannons does this plane have?
Why isn't the dodge working?
Head to filthycasuals.com.au for the links to all the other stuff that we have going on. We've got the Patreon where you get a bonus different show every week. We talk about movies and video and movies and TV shows and just all cultural things that aren't video games. We've got the YouTube channel where we've got hundreds of videos on there. We got Let's Plays, we got one-offs, we got our video episodes every week. We've got our Bandcamp episode recently where we tried to make the best game possible, Frankensteining different elements that are good from other video games.
Yeah.
And we
building an armored core.
Game. You spoiled the end. We just came up with Armored Core 6. But, you know, that was very fun. And, yeah, interesting weighing the sort of pros and cons of...
I'm so annoyed that you said Armored 4 because that was going to be what I said at the end of this. I was going to say, put some Norks on the robot, but now I can't say that.
Do a Gran Turismo one.
No, whatever. It'll be fine.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals...
Ben, you're going to the UK. You'll be able to play Armored Core. Blimey.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
He's back.
He did it.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.